So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone, or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. Talking NFL draft. And to help us do that, we head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our buddy Nick Bumgardner to the program from The Athletic. Nick, good morning. How are you?
Mark, good, guys. How are you?
Doing awesome, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. We're just kind of marveling at Rex Road lighting your publication on fire over here, going with his Diego Pavia column. That the comments are apparently out of control.
God, people hate Pavia. My goodness.
Well, hey, man, like, you know, you asked for that one, Joe, with the comments being out of control. You knew that Diego's a little lightning rod there, right? That's the idea.
It's amazing, and I should just stay out of the comments, but I can't help myself.
I know, right?
So, Nick, the Titans take Carnell Tate at number 4 overall. They trade back into the first round and get Keldrick Falk as well. Before we get to kind of the rest of what they've done in the draft, what did you make of those two moves with Tate at number 4 and then trading back into the first and taking Falk?
Yeah, I probably liked the Tate pick better than some people. I think a lot of people probably thought that was a bit of a reach. I think that you could make the case that, you know, I probably wouldn't have taken him 4 in a vacuum. But I think when you're looking at the whole thing here, you're looking at the board, I feel like it even came down to, like, him or Love. And when I saw Love a couple of times there in Tennessee, I was like, you know, I don't know about running back there. To me, that was like, I don't know if that's scratching as many itches as you need there. I think the receiver might have been, you know, because Cam Ward does need a lot of help. And I like Cardinal Tate. I think he was a top 10 player. I mean, if you want to take him a couple slots higher, I think that's fine. And I think it especially works out well for me when I look at, okay, so they got Cardinal Tate at 4. That's their guy. They like him a lot. And then they got the value that they got with Keldrick Falk at 31 to be able to go down there and get him, or I guess come up and get him as he was falling. I think that's outstanding. I think he could blossom into, you know, a top 15 player in this draft, maybe a top 10 player in this draft with the physical tools and everything else he has. That's a great fit for Saleh as well. So I really like what they did there in the first round overall, and I like Tate probably better than most.
So with Falk, because the big question, of course, is production. You want to see – you know, and we've seen some guys recently where it's like, man, the measurables are there, and it's so close to making all these plays, but doesn't finish the play. How big of a deal is that? And do you think that, like, Saleh is maybe a good, or this is a good landing spot because of Saleh to get him to finish plays?
That's exactly what you're hoping for, I think, right? And I think that the idea with Falk, he is either the youngest player in this class or one of, like, the 5 youngest players in the class. I think he's barely 20. So you've got a lot of room to grow there. And if you look at how he plays, I mean, he plays like a really young player. I think that's what it is. And I think if you're going to go to a guy who knows how to work with unique edges. I mean, that was part of the reason why I think the 49ers wanted to take Mike Hill Williams last year. He was out there with him, Saleh, and I think they're very similar. Williams ended up being hurt. Falk doesn't have the injury issues that Williams had. You know, he could turn into something that's maybe what we thought Chase Young should have been, you know, something like that someday. I think that's the long term, maybe like high case scenario there. I think that when I was watching him, I saw flashes of some Aiden Hutchinson, all the things Aiden Hutchinson can do from a 3-down standpoint against the run, against the pass, and obviously pass rush. I think Falk has the ability to get all that out. And if you're going to go anywhere, I would love it to be like I like Washington for him because Dan Quinn, same thing for Tennessee. A defensive head coach who's going to invest in that.
Nick, what did you make of Ty Simpson going at 13 to the LA Rams?
You know, I didn't, again, it's probably similar to the Tate reaction. I did not hate it as much as a lot of people hated it, because I think...
My main reason is the Rams are a Super Bowl contender. They're pretty close to being rostered out. They could have gotten more value their receiver maybe if they wanted to do that, but the two best receivers in this class were gone. Tate and Tyson were gone. They're the two guys that are going to be ones, or at least, you know, the best shot to be ones. So, you know what? They're pretty much rostered out. They need to do something down the road because Stafford can't play forever. I did not hate it. I mean, that's higher than you probably would have liked for a guy like Ty Simpson. I wouldn't have taken him that high if it's me.
Vacuum. But in their situation, I think that they were the team that a lot of people talked about this, you know, quietly, I suppose, during the draft. Like, the only team that maybe could surprise you would be the Rams in taking him because, you know, they have the time. They had a coach who, you know, in theory, could work with young quarterbacks. We'll see if he learned from the Jared Goff situation at all there. But the Rams need to make a decision somewhere down the road. I thought that they were almost like a year too late. I, you know, for the last like 2 years, I've been suggesting take a quarterback, sit him behind Stafford, let Stafford teach the guy, let him be a mentor to the guy. I mean, Joe, you know this. Stafford's not going to complain. He's a pro. He doesn't care. He's not going to be threatened by Ty Simpson. He will help Ty Simpson. And I think that that's a great situation for him to go to. So if he's going to have success, I think that's maybe the best case scenario for his landing spot.
So, Nick, you wrote about the 27 quarterbacks. And man, there are a lot of names. I mean, I looked through there. One of the guys you mentioned is one of the other guys to think about. I'm looking at like Josh Hoover, and I'm like, I don't know, man. What does the Cignetti factor do to that guy, like in a year? But I looked at that list, and I feel good. I feel good about Arch Manning being a first rounder. Like I think he's, you know, obviously the second half last year, and Dante Moore too. And after that, like, man, I just feel like it could go so many ways. First of all, do you agree with that? Is there anybody else in that group where you right now would stand on a table and say, that guy, that quarterback is going in the first round in 27?
No, and that's why I think, you know, like when I led the thing off, I was like, it's impossible nowadays to, you know, make that call a year out and say, well, this class is going to be a star class. You know, this is going to be loaded, right, or whatever it ends up being. We just cannot do that, and it's for a few different reasons. Number one, you know, these guys stay. They don't leave. You know, NIL has changed everything. So that's that. Number two, the transfers and everything else all over the place, you know, with movement and this, that, and the other, I think it impacts everybody's development, especially the quarterbacks. And so to me, it's impossible. Look, Brandon Sorsby is a guy that everybody loves. And they've been talking about him for a year in the scouting world. He's winning a gambling rehab. So, I mean, like, we don't know what's going to happen with these guys a year out. Drew Messemaker, the kid that went from North Texas to Oklahoma State, everybody loves him because he's big, he's got athleticism, he's got a huge arm, he knows the air raid, all that stuff. But, like, he hasn't played against anybody of note, and if he doesn't do well the first half of this next season, he's going to be off all those boards. So the whole thing can change, as you guys know, in a month into the year. And I think, like you said, Joe, the only two guys that I think right now you put a stamp on, the two guys that would, if they had gone out this year, they would have been first-round picks, Dante Moore and Arch Manning. I think that those are the guys that lead the way. We can bank on those two, I think. Maybe not Arch. He could actually stay at Texas if he wants to. He doesn't need any money. But, you know, for the most part, I think that they're a safe bet. Everybody else, though, it's still kind of up in the air.
Nick, last thing for you here. What do you think of Anthony Hill Jr., who the Titans traded back into the second round to go grab out of Texas?
Yeah, that was the other one that I liked a lot too for Saleh for that specific reason. It's very similar to the conversation with Falk in that Hill is a really young player but an ascending talent with a ton of like hybrid potential. He's really long, explosive, fast. One of the guys who could do the Micah Parsons role of playing the stack if you need to do that, but then also line up along the line of scrimmage and rush from a few different spots. He's got to grow up. He's got a lot of work to do. But again, I think you're banking on a hungry head coach who's back at it for a second time, was a defensive guy. You know, hopefully Saleh got a lot of that confidence back last year in San Francisco, and I think that those are some good developmental picks for him to work with.
Well, Nick, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and we will talk to you soon.
You bet, fellas. Take care.
Nick Bumgarner, our guest here on the program, talking all things NFL draft. People are loving the YouTube chat where you can see Rex Rhodes' face as things are going on as well out here.
It was like kind of like different. It's like turn up the bass here, and then you turn up the treble here, go with the mid range here. You never know. You never know these days with the equipment and whatnot and the whatnot.
And the whatnot. I thought the comparison he gave there for Falk, pretty interesting. He said, you know, it kind of reminds him sometimes of watching Aiden Hutchinson. I was like, oh, okay.
The Titans will take that.
Yeah, I'll take that. Yeah. If you turn, and that is, you know, we talked about this, I guess it was last Friday. He's so young. Like, there's still so much room for development there. So, on the one hand, the lack of production last year for Falk scares the crap out of me. If I'm watching it, I'm like, he had 2 sacks, 30 pressures, and 2 sacks. I like the pressures. The 2 sacks has got to get better.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you're like, well, he is one of the youngest guys in the draft. How much better is he going to get as time goes on here?
Yeah, I heard DVD talking when they had TD on yesterday. They were asking him about, because actually this draft class, actually, other than that, skews old.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of teams like that, right? And I agree with TD. I don't think it's like they, it was like necessarily a strategy, but a lot of their guys are older. And, you know, it's good sometimes to get a 23, 24-year-old in here. I mean, that's fine. Oh. But when you have a young guy, especially if it's like a production thing, like, if he was 23, I'd be more worried about it, right?
Yes. I think you're also going to see, as time continues to go on here, more 22, 23, 24-year-olds in the later rounds of the draft. Because if you're a later-round draft pick and you're 20, you get NIL money and you hang around in college and try to improve your draft status. Like, that's
– yeah.
You know, the GMs last week were talking all about that. Is you look at the later parts of this draft and there are a bunch of 23, 24, 25-year-old dudes that you're drafting at that point. Not all of them, obviously, but it shades more that way. 615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll take more of your thoughts on the NFL draft, react to what Nick Baumgartner had to say. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Our football offseason coverage brought to you by Tennessee Brew Works. Locally brewed, community-driven, Tennessee Brew Works. The official craft beer, your football offseason coverage here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Appreciate Nick Baumgartner from The Athletic for being with us in the last segment. Let's head back to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Mark in Nashville to the program. Mark, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, good morning, Robbie. What's morning. Up, Uncle Joe?
What's up, Mark?
Yeah, how you doing, man?
Good, buddy.
Hey, Joe, first of all, before I get started, Joe, tell me, what has happened to our Pistons, Joe? What's happened to the Detroit Pistons, man? Are they laying down? I mean, is Bickerstaff finally showing his true colors? Because, you know, when he gets in big games, Joe, he kind of chokes up. He's not making adjustments. I mean, Cade Cunningham and Duren, I'm really shocked with Duren, man, the way he's playing.
Been awful.
What's happened to him, Joe? Yeah. What's happened to him, man?
Well, Bickerstaff, I mean, there's some of the stuff he's done with the lineups, not great, but Cunningham's been bad. Duren's been horrible, and you know, like who hits shots for them? They're not built. You know, they don't have. You got to have shot makers. So, I mean, I could go on and on about this. I won't, but yeah, it's bad.
Well, they're gonna have to get them a go-to scorer in the draft, Joe. Somebody consistently scores, not Duncan Robinson, but we'll leave that alone for right now. But
yes. Yeah,
Robbie, Joe, I thought the Titans had a good draft. Mel Kiper had them graded with a C, C minus, whatnot. I thought Hill, who they picked in the second round at number 60, was good. Falk, like Joe and Robbie, like y'all said, he's young, but I think he'll be productive. I think eventually he'll take over at one of the defensive end spots. I don't know what Oladeji is going to do, but, you know, they got him a running back out of Penn State a little later on in the draft. They got him. If not mistaken, they got a guard or something in the draft in the fifth round. If I'm not mistaken, out of Arkansas. So yeah, I thought they had a pretty productive draft. Of course, you got Tate there. He's going to have to be that number one guy, that number one receiver. But I want to see what Tate, the adjustments he make being number one. What does he do when defenses start rolling their coverage over his way? How is he going to deal with that? When they do whatever they can to take him out of the game or whatever, whatnot, I want to see then what he does. And, Robbie, I'm going to have to agree with you on something while I got you on here.
Okay.
Lenore Sellers is not going to get any better, Robbie, staying over there with Shane Beamer. I see what you're talking about with Beamer now, Robbie. He's not a great coach.
Yeah, he's a
decent coach. Yeah, he's not a great coach, Robbie. And I thought Sellers, if anybody should have hit the portal, it should have been Sellers because I just don't think – I think his draft status is falling, just like I was shocked with what happened to Nussmeier. That was a big shock to see him go. He almost became Mr. Irrelevant in the draft. But I just think Sellers should have left and went somewhere else. Thornsby, he's probably ruined his career. Is he Arch Schleister, Joe? And we got another Arch Schleister out here with Thornsby. I mean, it really makes you wonder. And the quarterback y'all were talking about out of North Texas State, Joe, think about this. Remember this name, Joe. Is he Brock Osweiler? Is he Brock Osweiler, Joe? Or is he that guy with the big arm that can be an elite NFL quarterback? But, hey, man, I just wanted to throw all that by y'all today. Hey, go to Circle K, Robbie. Get you some bug juice.
I'll have
to. Some fried liver, bug juice. We'll see y'all, man.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. Ian did look up the bug juice the other day. Turns out I think I've had that as a child.
So it's an energy drink?
No.
It's like a
kid's drink.
Kid's drink.
Oh.
Yeah.
Almost looked like a, you know, something you'd put in your lunchbox.
Like one of those little plastic little drink. Oh, okay. Wow.
Mark covered a lot of
ground. With livers.
There. Yeah.
With a very not child. Snack of fried liver.
Yeah. You know what I mean? How many kids are eating that right now?
God, I hate liver.
Yeah.
Terrible memory as a child. There was a lot there to unpack, but, yeah, now I'm mad about the Pistons. Thanks, Mark.
One texter says, if Falk and Hill are each Pro Bowlers within the next four seasons, but Tate never has more than 500 yards, how would you view the draft? Would it be a success?
No. But your number four, the number four pick in the draft, is a complete bust. It's hard to say it would be a success.
That'd be a success.
Would it be? I mean, is that a salvage to some extent? If those guys are both Pro Bowlers, I mean, man, your defense probably is going to be nasty, right? So, but it's hard to like. I think it would be hard to view the draft as a success because it means that we're sitting through a bunch of 12-7 games around here for more years, you know. But I mean, like the Pro Bowler thing would be that'd be great, but yeah, I think it'd still be hard to overcome Tate being that much of a bust.
Well, I mean, the answer is very simple. It would not be a success. It could be way less of a failure if the other guys are Pro Bowlers, but it's not a success if your number four overall pick isn't any good.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like last year's draft. You know, the receivers. That's a nice start. I mean, Oladejo is a big deal, but like. Well, let's say he pops, and the receivers keep getting better. Let's say, okay, but then Cam Ward isn't good.
Then it's not a success.
Then it's not a success.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's as simple as that.
Yeah, it's just that you set. It's all about there's depth, and man, you a lot of really important, really great players in this league are second and third rounders for sure, and certainly plenty after that too. But man, that first pick, if you're hitting on those. Consistently, or if you're not, you that correlates pretty strongly with success or failure.
There's no doubt about it. And again, like, is it possible that, you know, this time 2 years from now, Ward hasn't blossomed into what they hoped he would be, and then, I don't know, Oladejo's turned into a good pass rusher, and those fourth-round receivers we talked about last year are pretty good, and Gunnar Helm's pretty good. Then, yeah, like, it's less of a failure, right? Like, you got a lot of stuff that worked out later. But you still took a quarterback number one overall and busted. I mean, it's not a success at that point. It's the same thing with Tate at number four. Like, you can, there are ways for it not to be a colossal failure if he doesn't work out and some of these other picks do. But it's not a success when your first pick, especially that high of a pick, doesn't work out. So I'm hoping the Titans avoid that scenario.
Quarterback one, receiver four, back-to-back drafts.
Yeah.
I don't have this information, but off the top of my head, who else in this league has something like that? One for sure is Burrow
and Chase.
Chase, right? Yeah. And that is as good as it gets. And I'm not holding these guys to that standard. You know, Caleb Williams and
Adunze
would be a comparable situation, something like that. You know, like Stroud and like Nico Collins. I mean, you go – you know, like, I'm trying to think, did the Chargers ever draft anyone really high for Herbert? I mean, they had,
you know, Mike Williams.
I guess Mike Williams.
Mike Williams,
did
I guess.
They, but actually, they got Mike Williams before they got Herbert.
I think they did. Yeah. Well,
but fine. That'd
that
be
a Corey Davis draft.
There'd
so,
be
yeah.
another one, though. Like, you know, Tyreek Hill and Mahomes, I guess. But I don't even remember where Hill was drafted. I don't think he was a super high pick.
He was there
pick,
before.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, bottom line is, like, when you do that, a one and a four, then it needs to be one of those pass catch combos that you talk about in the league. Is one of the best, one of the most feared pass catch combos in the league. It has to be that. So that's really what these two drafts are going to be judged on.
I give you one that was a long time ago, and the receiver got taken first, Marvin Harrison with the Colts, and then Peyton Manning a couple years later.
Yeah, and then here's Reggie Wayne.
Yeah, throw him.
And hey, here's Dallas Clark. And hey, here's Edgerrin James.
Worked out pretty well.
It did. And by the way, Peyton Manning's the best quarterback who's ever played in the NFL.
There we go.
He's the best.
There we go.
Peyton Manning at his best is the best quarterback play we've seen in the NFL. I'm not a Vols homer. Everybody ripping on me for being a Vandy homer. I'm not a Vols homer. Which is it? It's true. His 04, 05, 06, that range right there, he's the best quarterback. That's the best quarterback play the NFL's ever seen.
I think the answer is none of those things. It's just that you're a total Tom Brady hater is what it is.
Well, I didn't mention Tom Brady. There's other people that would throw, you know, Marino or
I'm sure they
whoever.
Would.
I didn't mention Tom Brady.
I know.
He's a great player. He was really good.
Definitely the best quarterback the Patriots have ever had. Just give Drake May a couple more years.
Yeah, but did you watch Steve Grogan in 1983? I mean, I'm just saying. Tony Eason. Let's not forget Tony Eason.
Wait till Drake May continues to get coached up this year and what that's going to look like. Another year, maybe back to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. People on the freaking internet talking about playlists right now. Talking about freaking playlists.
Yeah, I saw that.
I mean, I might strangle Stilly. Figuratively. This is not like pre-crime division. I won't actually physically harm him. But I might actually have to, like, find him and, like, maybe throw him against a wall or something.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. More of your thoughts on the NFL draft. I also have some Predators thoughts to get into as it relates to the general manager search coming up next. We'll get into all that. The Rob rant at 745. All that ahead. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 the game. Today, Vanderbilt baseball takes on MTSU at Hawkins Field. First pitch at 3:30. Catch all the action on 94.9 The Fan. Coverage presented by Gary Force Acura. We'll have the Rob rant coming up here in just a few minutes at 745. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Let's head back to our phone line. Welcome in Neil to the program. Neil, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, guys. How y'all been?
Good, buddy.
Great. How you doing?
Hey, awesome. And I do want to say something, Joe. You just mentioned about Peyton Manning. You know, he's my favorite player of all time. That 2013 season he had was ridiculous. 55 touchdowns. You're not going to see any better play than that. But I do want to say this, and I've noticed, and y'all can call me on it if you want. I think college has dumbed down quarterback play, and I think it's transitioning to the NFL to where you're not seeing a lot of good quarterbacks come in. I think that they're worried about RPO instead of having a quarterback that can actually sit in the pocket, dissect the defense, and actually make plays. And I'm thinking that you're starting to see a transition back in the NFL with Sam Darnold, Justin Herbert, of course, Joe Burrow, you know, Brock Purdy. I think you're going to start seeing them trying to get pocket quarterbacks again, because I think if you're worried about a quarterback that can run and make plays, eventually he's going to get hurt. And I think Cam Ward needs to get better at dissecting defenses, especially at the line of scrimmage. So I think college has kind of dumbed down quarterback play. I've been thinking this for a while, and until they can get back into teaching these quarterbacks how to read defenses and how to make adjustments at the line of scrimmage instead of like, well, if you don't like this play, go to this play, go to this play. I think that you're going to see quarterbacks struggle for a while, and that's just my opinion. And by the way, you know, I love you guys, man. You guys are amazing, and y'all keep this station afloat right now, man. I just want to let y'all know that.
Thank you, Neil. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
An amazing day, man. God bless you guys.
Thank you, buddy. I mean, I would say, you know who agrees with Neil and who talks about this all the time? Your boy Tom Brady. For the second time, me bringing him up in the last 8 minutes.
Oh, yeah?
He talks about this all the time, about how quarterback play, you know, quarterbacks coming into the league now, it's just way different than it was 20 years ago, where you just – all the RPO stuff he brings up, but it's also like the, you know, you're looking over to the sideline and it's like, all right, that's my play call. Let's go. Like,
but that's not every college offense. But
no,
yes,
it's not.
It is more now for sure. No, I think that that's certainly a struggle coming from that, with college coaches trying to, yeah, dumb it down as much as possible, make it as simple as possible. I also will say, though, like, I mean, RPOs work in the NFL,
too. No, RPOs work in the NFL, but it's also, like, you are seeing some of the – I think it's a case-by-case basis. There are still quarterbacks that come in the league that are really good at reading defenses, right? Like,
yeah.
Joe Burrow didn't come in the league that long ago, and the moment he walked in the league, one of the things people talked about was, well, my goodness, he knows everything he's looking at already in front of him. Like, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, obviously Mahomes had the year. Yep. But the one thing I would disagree on the call is the mobile quarterback. I mean, I think what you're seeing actually instead is you're seeing it become less and less likely for a straight-up statuesque pocket quarterback to excel in the NFL. I think because what are we talking about with pocket quarterbacks? I mean, I hate to project greatness for Caleb Williams because I really don't want it to happen because I hate the Chicago Bears, but like I think it's looking pretty good, man. Yeah. And you look around the league, and I think mobility as part of the deal is still a – I go through, you know, Josh Allen's and the Jalen Hurts, and then you even have the extreme case. I mean, we'll see what happens in this kind of – this second act for Lamar Jackson, but I'd still probably, like, sign up for an offense with him leading it if it's the right offense, right?
Yes.
You adjust your offense to your talent. But I agree. This is the Tennessee – it's not like Tennessee's offense is the only offense where guys are looking to the sideline every time. But it is one of the parts of that offense that, like, coaches certainly like it a lot better to see someone run like an Indiana style of offense where you do make some checks at the line on your own and you're not just looking to the sideline every time.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Tennessee offense is a good example, but it's not the only one. There are several across college football. Right now, they're in some ways, Joe, a problem developing from the standpoint of if you're the college head coach, if you're Heupel, let's take him for example, you're running an offense that's trying to get you to win games, right?
Exactly.
That's the only thing you care about, right? Which is great. That's what you should care about. You're the college football coach.
Yes.
In some ways, that offense is detrimental to development as a National Football League quarterback prospect. Doesn't have to be. Like, it's not like you can't read defenses from the offense. As we know, we've talked about this, and this was an Ole Miss thing under Kiffin. I'm sure it'll be an LSU thing under Kiffin. It's definitely a Heupel thing. Like there are elements of the offenses that they run that do not help you as a quarterback or as a wide receiver in the NFL draft evaluation process.
Yeah, and look, especially if you can, like, win a championship with that offense, I don't give a crap. Like, that's your job. I mean, if you want to go back when it was really different, go back to the days of, like, when Oklahoma and Nebraska was one of the greatest rivalries in college football and Oklahoma ran the wishbone.
Yep.
I mean, you know, the amazing thing is that Oklahoma actually had Troy Aikman initially in that offense, and he's like, you know, I'm going to go to UCLA and, like, pass and then be, like, the number one pick. How about that? Bye, you know. But, like, think about that. Like, incredible teams for Barry Switzer with Jamal Holloway and these guys just running the option, and they didn't care. It's like, yeah, we're going to go to the Orange Bowl and compete for a national championship every year. But that's all. Then you get into recruiting too, right? And it's like – and that's why, again, like for Josh Heupel, for example – it'd be nice to see Jackson Dart be great this year with the New York Giants and prove that a quarterback from that system can succeed in the NFL because there is a recruiting element, but it hasn't hurt him. He's got another five-star, one of the top quarterbacks in the country, on campus this year.
Right. I mean, I think eventually, though, you're going to look at other coaches. I'm sure other coaches are already doing this.
Oh, they 100% are doing it.
It ain't going to work in the NFL, so why would you go there? Just come here.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and you know, over here, very different offense, but kind of a similar thing. You know, it's going to be interesting moving forward with Vanderbilt and Jared Curtis, who, again, I don't want to overhype anyone. We just talked about how we think this quarterback or that quarterback a year ago is going to be this or that, and all of a sudden it's totally different. But Jared Curtis has the tools to be an NFL quarterback and has the tools to be a high pick at some point.
I think you compared him to Stafford.
That was Gentry Estes, by the way. I was quoting Gentry Estes. But, no, look, you think of that, maybe because he was a Georgia man, but you think of that with his height and his arm. You're like, geez, right? Well, he's in this Vanderbilt offense, and so it is not what they do in the NFL. Like, is that going to help, hurt? going to have any impact at all when it comes time, you know, these things. And other coaches will use these things against coaches who run the offenses that are way different from NFL offenses.
What do you think of Joey from Gallatin's take that Brady, Breeze, Manning in that order on the quarterback list, and to say anything else is to admit that, quote, you don't know ball.
Oh, we're talking Joey ball. We're talking ball knowing now, huh?
I think
Joey from Gallatin making some ball knowing judgments.
I mean, I love Drew Brees. I think Drew Brees ahead of Peyton Manning in your all-time quarterback rankings, I would classify as a take.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't get there with that. I love Drew Brees. He's a great player. He's somewhere on the list. I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to get into ripping Joe Montana. You know, he was a great player. He was. You know, it's always like, how much do you count against in these discussions, like what's around you? If it's great, how much do you – I think Brady gets a lot of – I mean, obviously Brady has the most rings and the longevity, all that stuff. In all seriousness, no, with Brady, I think a lot of people look at his time and say he didn't have – like we talked about Peyton Manning's offensive skill guys, right? He didn't have that. He did have a lot of good players. He also had Randy Moss, like, playing incredibly well during his best season. And he had a great defense, which we never give any credence to. Whereas Dan Marino didn't, and Dan Marino didn't really have great receivers. But all I know is, we can spend this summer ranking everybody, I guess. But I just truly believe that Peyton Manning at his peak is the best quarterback we've seen in the NFL. He does not have the achievements of Brady, right? He has two rings.
No one
does. And the caller earlier, great point on the Denver year, too. You know, post-neck injury to do what he did in Denver. Insane.
What was it like watching Johnny Unitas at his top level? Yeah,
I did not see. I am not that old. But he had a hell of a haircut, I'll tell you that much. Sweet Johnny. Yeah, but there are people that be like, you guys have no clue. It's Johnny U all the way.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we can't compare numbers. I mean, I don't even care about the numbers because that just was a different game, right?
It was a very different game.
So how do you compare that? What about your guy Bart Starr? He won a bunch of championships, but he mostly tossed student body left, student body right. You know, I don't know.
Good form on the toss, though.
Yeah, and he threw a few passes to Max McGee, who was hung over as hell. Super Bowl I.
That did happen. I went back and there's this old DVD they put out in like 2002 of all like the greatest moments in Super Bowl history. That one's heavily featured in there. Like, hey, it costs like $8 to get in. Here it is.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah, it's a sort of
it's like a carnival.
A weird exhibition football game. Well, let's check it out, I guess.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. The Rob Rant coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
You know, hot dog was kind of sounding good. And I even thought to myself at the time, I might even put ketchup on it. Like, that's how good a hot dog sounds right now. I'd even be willing to do that.
If Tom Brady were a lady, he could have my baby.
There may not be that many cougars in the hills, but there are coyotes.
Tom Brady, he's a winner. I'd like to buy him dinner. For some reason, he doesn't return my call.
Here's a man that has touched the hem of Jesus.
You want to make me mad, I'll scream at you.
I'm just reading the news here. It is time for the Rob Rant, brought to you by Rapid Response Generators. Power when it matters most. Check them out at rapidresponsegenerators.com.
Before you go, what was that song that was so heavily featured there?
Some fun Tom Brady song I had in there.
Yeah,
saved. That's a Tom Brady song?
Yeah, it's about Tom Brady.
Okay, I'm going to have to familiarize myself with that.
He's a man of many talents.
Yeah.
A lot of things going on.
The Pharaoh.
Yeah. Great nickname. The Pharaoh. I would like to speak today about the Milwaukee Admirals, which
yes.
I know Joe's very excited about. Here's where I'll go with this, okay? I realize that this conversation I'm about to embark on requires some nuance, okay? You know, we talked a couple weeks ago about Scott Wheeler from The Athletic had the Predators prospect pool ranked as number 5, right? So you got a top 5 prospect pool according to The Athletic. I think Barry Trotz brought that up at the end of season press conference. All those things are exciting. And I recognize fully that a lot of those guys that are responsible for the top 5 prospect pool ranking are not yet with the Milwaukee Admirals, okay? So I understand all that.
But some of them are, by the way. And they lost to Manitoba in the first round of the playoffs. So, you know, again, this is a nuanced conversation. You know, I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm overly familiar with the Manitoba Moose. I know Joe is, so we'll get his thoughts on the Moose and what they bring to the table.
Is that the Mooses?
I don't think so. We'll get his thoughts on what they bring to the table. But I guess my point is this. You know, we keep talking about the prospect pool. And, you know, a lot of guys playing in the prospect pool. By the way, a lot of guys playing for Milwaukee in that series that ended the year with the Predators, okay? So, talking at least borderline NHL players, and in some cases, I think they're going to be NHL players next year, moving forward, all full-time for the Predators. And it's, you know, it's a three-game series. I get it. But, like, at some point, don't you need to win something? If you're, like, if you're this prospect pool that's as good as everybody says it is, you know, we'll wait and see. Obviously, you know, Brady Martin was there for a cup of coffee for the playoff series at the end of the year. So, good to get him in some professional hockey action. He scored his first pro hockey goal. All that's great.
Nice-looking goal.
That's nice.
Nice-looking goal.
All that's good. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and freak out or overreact to one playoff series. But, like, it would be nice to – if you're trying to sell the future to the fan base of, hey, how about some of these prospects, many of whom are going to be playing for your NHL team next year, I think, go on a run in the playoffs, and instead they're just done right now. So that was the thought I had over the weekend. I was just like, you know, shouldn't they, like, go win something at some point?
Yeah, it's, you know, sometimes you have, like, the minor league teams that, like do really well, and then, like, it doesn't translate. And you probably, like, you could probably have, like, if you have a couple great players and, you know, whatever, maybe it's not, you know, for whatever reason, the other team has a goalie who steals a series.
Sure.
Like they, stuff like that.
And let me be clear. Okay. Again, a nuanced conversation. I did not watch any of the Admirals and the Manitoba Moose.
That's very disappointing.
Yeah.
I'm very disappointed.
Or as Sonny says, the Meese.
I like that. But, yeah, I think you're right. I think that, like, you definitely, if you have a lot of guys together who are supposed to be, they're supposed to win here.
Yeah.
So you figure, like, that should mean something.
I'm just saying.
That should impact the results.
At the very least, again, I'm not going to overreact to one three-game playoff series as my mic drops here. At the very least, I think if you're a Predators fan, it's disappointing that that's the way. It's like, oh, really? Like, this is how this has gone out this year? It's just like, oh, okay. So this, they just got started and they're done. Cool.
Well, especially because some Predators fans, I think, kind of look forward to this time of year so they can, like, latch on to the ads and dream of what will happen. We've had the other way around where maybe a little much was made of a run by the ads.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it wasn't that long ago they made a decent run. I mean, a couple years in a row of a decent run. And then the last two I would describe as disappointing in the playoffs. So I'm just throwing it out there. A lot of these guys are on the doorstep of being NHL players. Disappointing that they couldn't go farther than that. I'm sure that they would agree.
Well, I think we need to spend a little time breaking down the failures of the Milwaukee Admirals. You know, we might need maybe we need to go do some remotes up there.
Maybe
it's
so.
Finally about time.
Let's get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, yeah. What is going?
Yeah, we were planning remotes to go for a deep playoff run, and then they didn't cooperate. Didn't quite get there.
For those of you who did watch closely, what's wrong? What happened to the ads?
Yeah,
let us know.
I'm just throwing the idea out there. By the way, on the Predators front, it looks like they are. They have narrowed down their list. Elliot Friedman put this out there last week, and that they are, I would assume, in the final stages here of a general manager hire. You know, I was talking to somebody about this the other day, Joe. You know, Barry Trotz comes out a few months ago and makes the announcement that he's stepping down. And one of the things that Bill Haslam talked about at the time of the press conference was, well, doing this now gives you a head start on all this. So I'm like, well, if you're going to have a head start, let's get her done here, right?
Like,
it's time to go. So, look, I mean, they've been talking to people for a while. So, from that standpoint, they did get the head start. But, I mean, I would assume you've talked about as much as you can talk at this point. And the general manager search, I hope, is coming to a pretty swift close here. Hopefully here in the next few days would be my hope on all this. But
is there any chance that, like, through all this, through the meticulous nature of this search, that they might end up losing out on somebody?
I mean, maybe. I mean, I think Friedman put it out there on the 32 Thoughts podcast yesterday that maybe they're waiting for somebody that they've gotten word may slip through the cracks here and be available that maybe they didn't think. I don't know. Like, we'll see. I mean, people seem to think Tom Fitzgerald is a finalist, right? I mean, we've talked about
Preds legend.
Brett Peterson from Florida being a finalist. So, like, I don't know. I have no idea who they're going to end up with. But it does feel like they're narrowing it down pretty significantly here. You know, maybe if Saban would get off the draft set for the NFL and go hire the general manager,
yeah,
we could have this done by now.
Priorities, please, Coach Saban. Man, Craig here says, as a Preds season ticket holder, a first-round exit for the Admirals makes sense. Got to get them used to how it's going to be when they make the playoffs with the Preds. Damn, Craig. But you know what? You're a Preds season ticket holder. You have a right to make that comment.
Say whatever you want. Yeah. I mean, Joey says, last night's Utah-Vegas game was a great example of what can happen in the playoffs. I have watched a fair bit of the playoffs to this point. It's been pretty good. I will say, and I know this is one specific series that I've honed in on, I've watched basically every second of Tampa Bay and Montreal. It's a very different level of hockey than the Predators have played this year, let me tell you. I'm watching that, I'm like, oh, God. Lee,
this is what it can be like.
This is very fast. So there's work to do for the Nashville Predators.
Yeah. Get a GM.
That would be a good start. But again, like I hope we're getting pretty close here on the GM front. Conventional wisdom would tell me that they are. I mean, I guess technically there doesn't necessarily have to be a rush. Like, we're still a significant distance away from the draft and free agency and all that stuff. But I mean, you've been working on this for a while at this point.
So. Yeah, I feel like there's plenty of work that can be done.
Yeah.
Right now.
Oh yeah.
Starting right now.
I mean, most importantly, like you know, the general manager, whenever they hire this person, you're going to have to come in and do a pretty – I mean, it's one thing to go through the interview process and do the deep dive, but, you know, getting into the chair, getting into the seat, you know, actually evaluating what you have, meeting some of the people involved in your organization, like, that's different. And there's a lot of self-scouting, I think, to do here with your current roster
for this
new GM.
Real quick, Neil says, if the Preds hire another former Pred, I'm not going to go to games until they fire that person. Is that going to be a widespread reaction if it's Fitzgerald?
Yeah, I don't know about widespread, but it will be some. I would like to point out, like,
I don't really buy that.
There is a little bit of a difference. Like, I understand the idea because I'm with you. I don't really love the idea of hiring people who have been associated with the organization. I mean, Fitzgerald was 20-something years ago,
yeah.
So there is that. And he's associated with the organization. He hadn't been here in a long time. Like, it's been a long time. What is it, 2002 was the last time he was here? That's a long time ago. So that part of it doesn't really bother me with him. I think what bothers me more about Fitzgerald would be, you know, it didn't really go all that great in New Jersey. So I'd rather take my chances with one of these other guys.
I'm just saying that connection, if he had a hand in the team building – at any point, that's different, right?
That did not happen.
Yeah. So, but yeah, other things about him you may not like, and that's fine.
615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. We will get back into the NFL, the NFL draft, aftermath of that. Plus, something Rex Rhodes is going to be paying very close attention to over the coming days, weeks, months, and years. We will get into that. Robbie and Rex Rhodes, 1025 The Game.